Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Social Work Radio with me, your host, Vince Peart. This week's listeners, we've got a treat. We've got a treat for you to make up for missing last week's episode, which I can only describe as scheduling difficulties. Due to scheduling difficulties, our co-host that we had lined up for last week, Matt B, could not attend the recordings. So, riding in here like the cavalry, look to the east at the break of dawn on the third day. We've got a very old friend of the show, old in friendship, but not old in age. Her name's Cara Davis. I built you up there, Cara. I feel like we should have a drum roll or something.
I know.
Cara, welcome to the show. Would you like to introduce yourself to the social work world?
Hi, everyone. I've got an image of myself now riding across the hill on like a white horse with full armor.
That's it. You've come to Gondor's aid. Yeah, you've come to Gondor's aid.
My name's Cara. I am a social worker for all my sins, and I'm from the lovely town of Portsmouth on the south coast of the UK, otherwise known as Pompey.
Pompey. If our listeners haven't been to Portsmouth, tell me the top three things to do if our listeners were thinking about trip. Now, we've got listeners in over 100 countries. So coming from, sure. If our five listeners in Trinidad and Tobago were thinking about coming to Portsmouth, what would be the three things you would recommend they do?
Oh, you've got the lovely dockyard full of naval history. Don't you know that D-Day was launched from Pompey?
There we go. We're off to the dockyards. After we spent the morning in the dockyards, what have we got next?
It's a city that I love and it's close to my heart, but I feel like it's got quite a bad rap. So maybe you'd want to go and experience the full cultural sites of Fratton Park, which is our local football team stadium. I probably wouldn't eat any of the food or drink any of the drink there, but you will fully embrace the cultural experience there. And then you can't come to Portsmouth and Southsea, which is a little town within Portsmouth, without seeing the beautiful sea.
The sea. So we've got dockyards, sea and football.
The glamour.
The glamour. Well, there we go, our listeners in Trinidad and Tobago. Come to Portsmouth. You've got football or soccer, as you guys might know it. You've got soccer, sea and dockers.
I am open to an exchange, like a home exchange. You know, they do that. So if we've got any listeners from Trinidad and Tobago that want to do a home exchange, and maybe you do want to experience a little bit of Pompey culture, I'm open to that.
I imagine like The Holiday. You aware of the Christmas film, The Holiday?
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be like. That's what it's going to be like.
Just someone sat on my sofa crying, being like, I've made a terrible decision.
Yeah, there's going to be a woman out there in the Caribbean who's just had a breakup from an abusive boyfriend, a horrible boyfriend that was cheating on her, like the Cameron Diaz character.
And
she imagines that she's going to come to Portsmouth and there's going to be plenty of Jude Law lookalikes cutting about there, plenty of incredibly attractive widowers in their mid-30s. You can offer them football, you can offer them dockers, you can offer them the sea. Can you offer them a Jude Law?
I mean, there's plenty of men with receding hairlines, so absolutely.
Yeah, because that's why people are attracted to Jude Law, definitely. It's the hairline.
It's the hairline.
Yeah. That's it. So tell us about social work, Cara. I mean, a clue's in the name. We are Social Work Radio. Don't tell us about social work. You're not here to sell social work to people. I imagine the vast majority of people that have clicked on a show and our thousands of listeners probably are social workers, or at least I would hope have some sort of vested interest. But tell people, if you could, about how long you've been a social worker and, your professional journey so far, so our listeners will get to know a bit more about the town and a bit more about your professional journey too.
Yeah, so most of my social work has been in Pompey. Over a decade now. I started in residential, children's residential, and I absolutely loved that. And then moved on to youth justice. I've done a bit of work with children we care for and fostering, and really kind of settled in that sort of world with a little bit of mental health sprinkled in between. But I just love working with young people. I think adolescents, teenagers, I feel like I stopped aging at about 14, 15. So I feel internally I can really relate. They probably see me as some old bird now. I've gone from the stage when you first start social work and they're like, oh my god, you're like a sister to me, and yeah. then you kind of become the mum, and I'm waiting to move into the nan stage.
Tell me about it.
I can't be the cool friend anymore, because that's very obvious.
Do you know what? I get that, because I started social work in my late 20s. And, yeah, it was almost like I was an older brother kind of style figure, you know, that kind of older brother. And now definitely a fatherly figure, definitely. And I didn't notice the change. I didn't get a national insurance card. You know, when you turn 16, you get a national insurance card. It's made obvious. For our listeners further afield, you know, people of man and Cara's age, I don't think you get a national insurance card
anymore. No, you don't. It's all online. It's all digital.
I loved it when I got my national insurance card. I was like, excellent.
I've lost everything else, wallets, phones, car keys, but I still have my national insurance card.
Honestly, it was like a blue stripe and a red stripe, wasn't it? Half and half. Yeah. So you don't get that. You don't get that when you cross the Rubicon, you cross the threshold of becoming, you know, a father figure in the social work. You go from older sibling to a parental role. You don't get anything. It just happens overnight. Aged.
It's brutal. That moment when you realise you're not one of the cool kids now in social work, you're established and you are old. But I think in social work, I think being sort of in your early 20s, it's kind of like a unique thing that you have for a while. And then you sort of move for your 30s and your 40s and you're like, oh, okay, I'm part of the workforce.
What I noticed, though, is I lost that kind of more subtle connection with young people, but I gained a much greater connection with parents. Obviously, me working exclusively in child protection, social work, and various different guises within that. Yes, of course, the child's your client as well, but the vast majority of work tends to be done with parents, particularly if the children are younger, toddlers, babies, and under the age of 10 or something like that, really, where there's going to be less issues presented by the children and their behaviour and more due to the environmental factors in the parenting. So I think there's a kind of crossover there, and particularly when people just assume that you're at an age where you have children, whether you've got children or not, people kind of assume that. I mean, I went to social work when I was already in my late 20s, so I didn't experience what some people do when you go in at 21, 22, when it's most people would naturally assume by your age you don't have children. So there's this kind of a crossover where, yeah, I wasn't cool anymore, but I had a professional credibility, I suppose, it's made up. And I didn't change. All that happened was my hair got grayer due to social work, to be fair.
Stop being able to learn how to use Snapchat and TikTok and any of the lingo, and you're like, oh no, it's happened. Well,
I've got to tell you a funny story here. My girlfriend's a little bit younger than me, and you know, she's like a millennial. You've had this discussion years ago, Cara. I reject the millennial title. I don't want to be a millennial. I'm born in 1983, and I think I'm just.
You're a bit Gen. Is it Gen X-y?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of on the cusp, you see. And I don't want to be a millennial. She is a card holding millennial. She's got her millennial card. Me and you have got our national insurance card. She's got her millennial card. So she's got Snapchat. So I was really only using it to speak to her. And I was assessing a young teenage couple, and I had a friend there as well. So there's me, three teenagers in the room. And you know, Snapchat, it has a unique sound, doesn't it?
It does,
a message.
Yeah.
So the Snapchat sound goes off. And like, one of the teenagers looks at their phone, not them. The other one looks at their phone, not them. The other one looks at their phone, not them. And one by one, they turn and look at me like, this old guy cannot have Snapchat, can he? And honestly, I just felt like leaving. I was like, oh my God, honestly.
The shame.
Why is this old guy got Snapchat?
It's like that moment when our parents and aunties and uncles all joined Facebook, and it was like that notification that comes up and was like, oh, okay, well, this is over.
Yeah. Then the Minion memes started.
Yeah.
Definite. Tag if you want to win this toaster. Anyway, how's your week been? Whenever we start the show with our regular co-host, Cara, we'll always ask, what have you been up to since you were last on the show? I mean, it's been 5 years since you or I last did a pod, so we don't have that time. What have you been up to over the past couple of weeks? Tell our listeners the kind of thing that you get up to when you've got some free time to yourself in Portsmouth. What have you been up to recently?
Well, I always joke that I'll give up social work and become a florist because I feel like the isolation nice. Element of being a florist and sorting that out would be really soothing to my brain. Mm-hmm. And so I've really got into gardening over the last couple of weeks. In between the spits and spats of rain that we've experienced, I love gardening. And I heard about you loving your fermented vegetables. And I was like, relatable content.
Yeah.
Relatable millennial content.
You had my curiosity. Now you've got my attention. What have you been growing? How does your garden grow?
Oh, I've bought gigantic strawberries. Because obviously I can't afford strawberries in the supermarket anymore. So I'm going to grow my own. So I've got strawberries, I've got raspberries, I've got blueberries. I'm trimming the roses. I feel at one with nature. But honestly, I like it so much. And I remember looking at my dad when he, you know, used to garden when I was younger and being like, I don't really get it. And now I get it. I love B&Q. I love the garden centres. It's amazing. It's so good for my brain.
I was heavily into potatoes about a year and a half ago. I'm not going to lie.
That sounds like a really weird confession. I was knee-deep in potatoes.
Well, literally, I wasn't knee-deep, but I was up to my elbows. I was up to my elbows rooting for potatoes. Genuinely was. And I was growing potatoes, onions, asparagus. I had tomatoes. I tell you what grows really well. A courgette. Wow.
Ooh.
A courgette. Courgette will just spring up overnight on you.
Oh.
Well.
Fancy.
Yeah,
isn't it
yeah.
Weird how prideful you get about growing plants and vegetables and fruit. I don't know. It's just like a weird, I feel like, oh, that's like my child. It's great.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. And you get to eat it at the end.
I know. Who doesn't love something that ends up with a meal?
Well, you could eat the placenta.
TMI.
I'm buried in the garden. I have been on a trip to York. My girlfriend's a big fan of Harry Potter. Have you read Harry Potter, Cara?
I'm sure you're aware of it,
whether you've read it or not. Pretty hard to miss. Have you ever heard of Harry Potter? That is exactly the kind of question that would alienate me from my teenage clients. Hey, kids, have you heard of Harry Potter?
That very niche. Not at all popular film, Universal Studios. I am aware of Harry Potter. It's come across.
Very, surprise, surprise.
My radar a couple of times.
You are aware of Harry Potter. So you will be well aware of Diagon Alley.
Mm.
I took her to York because York has a street called The Shambles. And The Shambles, I'll send you a picture of this later, Cara. The Shambles is what J.K. Rowling based Diagon Alley around. So not only to take it to The Shambles, but we stayed at an Airbnb, which is Harry Potter themed. It's like, it's made out like, there's like a cauldron in there, the bed's four posters, the spare bedroom was made out of the Gryffindor common room. It was really, really fancy. Like, instead of lights, they had like candles hanging from the ceiling, not like you know, the Hogwarts, dining hall style candles. There was a tree in the front room that lit up. There was like a little nook, and all the tellies were just playing Harry Potter. It was, there was even a Hedwig, the owl, up in the tree. It was, we had an excellent time at York's. That's what I've been up to. In New York.
That sounds amazing.
It was good. It was good. We took her to a cocktail bar called the Evil Eye. There's lots of like Harry Potter themed shops. So,
Who knew York was such a fountain of Harry Potter fun times?
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, listeners, if you've never heard of that book called Harry Potter, I recommend you give it a read. I think everybody's heard of it. So, let's move on from Harry Potter and Snapchat and millennials and football and Dockers and the sea. And let's start talking about this week's topic. So, guys, this week's topic is a social worker's guide to making friends. Now, as always, listeners, what we like to do is we kind of like to base the podcast around a couple of articles that we've done this week. And Cara, as well as being all the things she's told you about, is also a columnist for Social Work News. And Cara, your opening columnist that you did a couple of weeks ago was, are they really your work wife or is it just a trauma bond? And you also did an article for us 2 years ago now, back in 2022, which was 5 ways to tell that you're friends with the social worker. And our supervision column that was out last Friday was all about how you make friends as an adult. So I kind of saw a bit of a theme there in relation to all of these things. So let's talk about your column to start with. Are they really your work wife or is it just a trauma bond? Listeners, if you want to check out that, just head over to mysocialworknews.com, type in Cara's name, Cara Davis, or just search in the top trauma bond, and that will come up. Any search term should come up on the website and show you that column. So obviously in this column, Cara, you talk a little bit about, you know, sometimes our friendships are bonded by true camaraderie and true connection. Sometimes our friendships are bonded by trauma. So does hardship, trauma, and shared pain bond us as friends? Is that something we need? You know, do hard times make good friends? Are we bonded by hardship and turmoil? Or, as you've suggested, can that sometimes be a bit more toxic and nefarious? Can it be both? Just tell us a little bit about that. What are your views?
Yeah, I think it can be both. It definitely doesn't have to be both. Mm. And I think I've got lots of friends where, outside of social work, where there isn't that that common theme of hardship. But I definitely think that hardship is a big part of why some of your friendships in social work become so deep and meaningful, and often quite quickly. It's really amazing, some of the friendships that I've built along the way with social work. And I think some of that is from some of those kind of difficult experiences that I've had with people, that sort of pain as a shared experience, someone who really gets it, and someone that has kind of gone through that experience with me and found a way to talk about it and sometimes even laugh about it and kind of make sense of it for me has been really beneficial in my social work career.
Yeah, and you get a dark humour with that as well, don't you? So I, you know, one of my good friends in social work, she used to hate me. Surprise, surprise, Cara, that sometimes, don't laugh. Don't laugh too much. Don't laugh. Stop it. Stop it. Surprise, surprise that someone's first impression of me may have been that I was a bit of a bleep. I've not said the word there and I've bleeped out myself, but you get what I'm saying, don't you?
I do. You're self-editing. Thank you.
Self-ed. Yeah, well, if I was self-editing, I'd probably find it a bit easier to make friends. I can do it in a controlled environment. A bit more difficult to do out there in the real world.
For sure.
So, I'm one of my very good friends, and I'll not name her because, you know, maybe she won't be my friend anymore if I name her, but she used to hate me, honestly. So we used to, me and Harry Potter reference here, me and she who will not be named, we used to work in the same office together. And we both come in quite early. I'd drop my daughter off at nursery, so I would get into the office about 10 past 8, and she would do the school run for her kids, and she'd get into the office about 8 as well. And we're both very, very dedicated, you know. No criticism to the other people. Well, actually, I'm about to say no criticism to the other people in the office, and I'm about to actually criticise them. So, okay, lots of criticism to the other people in the office. Me and my good friend were, I would say, very, very dedicated, very, very dedicated. We worked in a similar way, which was head down, do the work, work thoroughly, get home, and literally, you know, work as hard as we could. We believed in kind of, we both came from a very working class background. Our parents, manual jobs, you know, similar in that sense. Working class roots where, you know, an honest day's work for an honest day's pay. That was the mentality. Because we used to be in the office together. We would just sit in stony silence, literally just sit 50 minutes, wouldn't even do just like a grunt, like, you're all right, yeah. And that would be it, just like grunting at one another as we came in. And I would sit down, I would do my work, and that would be it, and I'd go. And she didn't like me, and I didn't like her. And then one afternoon, we had to go out on a joint visit together. Duty call came in. And I can't remember whether it was me or her on duty, but we had to go out together. And I was like, oh God, F my life is what I was thinking. Yeah, no way, no way. And evidently she was thinking worse. You know, oh God, here we go.
Oh, not.
He's a Me Too moment or something like that. Oh God, he's going to do something. He's going to be horrible. But we got in the car and we had a very, very difficult visit. And then we ended up, you know what it's like, you know, Friday afternoon duty call, you're chasing around the streets till about 8 o'clock at night, sorting things out. And then there was like kind of a shared moment where we had a laugh between us, like a laugh at the difficult times, like, oh, look at this, you know, what a situation. And then it was kind of in those moments, a chink of your humanity kind of shines through your social work armor. Because, you know, if you go into office, you know, there's a lot of expectations as social workers in the office, isn't it? You've got your professional regulations, you've got to uphold, you know, your profession's upstanding. You know, you have to act in a certain way, in particular, you know, particularly when you're around clients and colleagues of this management and so on. When you have those moments out of the office, while you're at work, it's kind of like, you know, kids on a school trip, you can be a bit naughty and get away with it. And there was a bit of a chink, and we just sort of broke through, and we sort of laughed, like, oh God, look at, we're here. And from that point onwards, you know, I would say she's probably one of my best friends in social work. I don't speak to her as much as these days as I used to, but, you know, we'd meet up outside of work. We'd go for drinks occasionally, just me and her would go out for dinner and stuff like that. You know, we've got each other jobs before, you know, since then I've found her a job. And then when I wanted to be a manager, she came onto my team and she sort of put forward jobs for me and so on. I helped her become an independent social worker. You know, we keep in touch. I'd say she's probably one of my best friends in social work to this day. And that all started from that kind of shared trauma and hardship, because we had a difficult job to do together, but we found the fun in it. We kind of became friends from that point. And I wonder how often that does happen, because that's what gave me one of my best friends in social work. And I wonder how often that happens, if that really is common. Yes, as you put in your articles, sometimes that can be a trauma bond that isn't necessarily good, but it can also be really good indeed, can it not?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably all of my really good friends from social work, we've got accounts of times where we've done something. And often there's a shared sense of fear in moments or kind of upset. And then you find that togetherness and you get through it. And it's sort of that social glue, isn't it, between the two of you, that is kind of, you have to rely on each other often in those situations as well. You know, you're looking for that person as your backup. You have to give them a level of trust, and that sort of reluctance that you talk about when you go out on a visit with maybe someone you don't know very well, or you don't know how they're going to act or interact, and then they work in a similar way to you, and that relief that you feel, it's like, oh my goodness, thank God we're on the same page, you're not going to make this situation worse, everything's going to be fine. And I think it's just that sort of, there must be like that release of hormones or adrenaline or whatever that just connects you, and you know, that sort of like, I've got you, you've got me, and there's a connection there that you might not have in any other type of friendship, because in normal friendships you probably won't be put in those sorts of situations.
That's a very good point indeed, because if you have friends outside of social work, how many times are you going to find that kind of struggle and strife together, because you're already going to be friends with those people, aren't you?
Yeah. And, you know, not often am I going off with my friends to situations that maybe be uncertain, or that I might have to give a difficult message to. You know, normally it's social gatherings and friends and family. And, you know, obviously all friendships and relationships have stressors, but you're put into these situations that are quite abnormal, really, in lots of ways. And I'm sure that there's probably lots of other professions like teaching and policing and nursing, that there's similar kind of situations that are abnormal to day-to-day life, and those sort of connections that you get with someone that you can rely on, I don't think there's many other situations outside of that you'd get those experiences.
No, I agree with you, definitely. You've been a social worker a similar length of time to me, more than a decade. Have you made a lot of friends in social work, and people that you still keep in contact with, even though you perhaps may no longer work directly with, or that are no longer employed by the same organisation as you?
Yeah, loads. I love my social work friends. I'm actually going for a paint and sip in a couple of weeks' time with a group of all my friends that we used to work in one team. We used to work in a Children We Care For team. And we're all going out for a little wine, and then we're going to paint. I guess that's really hitting
your voice, isn't it? They
create sort of you sort of copy them, I think. It's sort of a paint by numbers, you know, so you can pretend like you're an artist, but really you're just there for a wine and chat. But I think that kind of, you know, I don't always see some of those friends all the time, like you say. Some of my friends are really, really close. I'm actually baking a load of cakes next week for one of my closest friends who we met in a youth justice team. It's her baby shower next week. And so I'm going to be knee deep in flour or arm deep in flour and baking all her cakes. So, you know, I still can't forgive her, obviously. She went on annual leave one time and left me doing a mindfulness class to 10 young people on a youth rehabilitation order, which was possibly one of the worst experiences of my life. Because what do I know about mindfulness? Not a lot. But yeah, I think my friends that I've made, you know, not all of my friends that I've made along the way, you know, we're particularly close still. But there's a big core group of us that have remained really close friends, and they're a massive part of my life.
Do you know what? I bumped into a very old, my oldest friend in social work. I've spoken about on the podcast a little bit recently, actually, just through coincidence. Her name's Louise. I'm going to share her name because she didn't hate me at the start, so it's not going to be as embarrassing for her. But I met her, my best friend, Jason. He is getting into, it's a long story, Cara, but essentially he's getting into the kind of underground boxing scene. And yeah, well, I've already discussed this on the podcast the other week. I'm not going to go down that route again. He is, however, fighting next weekend. So I'll fill you in, listeners, next weekend. Hopefully he doesn't get filled in, but I'll give you an update. her brother boxes. So I was just at this event and I thought, I saw her brother was on the card. He was headlining the show. He's really, really good at brother. And I messaged her, said, Louise, are you here? She's like, yeah, I am. So I went over and I sat down with her. I hadn't seen her in person for more than 4 years. And we just picked up as if like we hadn't even changed, all the mutual friends, all the conversations. And she reminded me, I'm not doing myself any favors here, but I'm always honest. She reminded me of what I used to do with her in the office. That sounds really bad there. For my listeners, don't worry. You can still keep this on if your kids are in the car. I'm going to run this by you because a boyfriend was there, and a boyfriend looks like a handy fella. Obviously, he's in a box. And I was like, he was laughing about it, but I was like, this could go either way. I'm going to tell you how I used to treat my friend Louise, and I want you to tell me if you think this is really bad, because she was like calling me out on this. You ready for this?
Go for it.
So I like to be efficient in the workplace. You know, well enough by now, I like to be efficient. I like to be time bound. I like to box my time. I like to work efficiently. I like to be productive in the workplace, okay? And my good friend Louise used to like to talk a lot, and she used to always want to talk and ask me things, and just very, very friendly, lovely person. I was the one who had the problem, believe you me. It's just the way it usually is. And I said, I'm sorry, Louise, do you know what I mean? I'm really quite busy. So I developed a traffic light system about when she was allowed to talk to me. And sounds awful saying it. I had three different colored files. I didn't buy these files intentionally. It was just coincidence. I had a red file, a green file, and a yellow file. I said, right, Louise. Sounds awful, honestly. I said, right, Louise. I genuinely said this with a straight face. This is 11 years ago. You've got to forgive me. Well, she still remembers it 11 years old, so maybe not. I said, right, three file system. She says, when I've got the red file out, I can't talk. I'm working on a report. I'm doing case notes. I'm writing an assessment. I can't talk, my friend. If I've got the yellow file out, you're allowed to ask me questions, but we can't talk for longer than 5 minutes. If I've got the green file out, you're allowed to talk as long as you like. Do you think that's acceptable workplace etiquette?
It's like a meme of what is like a bad boss, you know, like when they...
I wasn't a manager at the time.
I know,
I was an ASYE.
It's like that sort of like idea that you can you can have times when you can or can't talk to people.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it because I'm a natterer. So yeah. I love a chit chat. And like me and my friend used to have, we were both managers in a team. We used to have like a routine every morning. We'd get in, we'd go upstairs to the canteen, have a toast, tea, and then be like, oh goodness, we need to go to actual work. Work starts now. So I get it. But I mean, I probably would have thrown one of the files across the room if I was like desperate to chat to you.
Well, do you know what's really sad?
No control.
She made me really sad because when I saw her last Saturday at the box, and she says, do you know what, Vince? You never once put the green file out for me. honestly, my heart was breaking, and I just felt like, I felt like going down and seeing the local father and going to the confession and saying, well, Father, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I never put the green file out once for Louise. I didn't. She's right.
I mean, she has got some resilience, that's for sure.
She has. We're still friends 11 years on.
There you
How this has happened, who knows? But yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've moved on from those times. I just time box people now instead. So, right. Well, so if you've got something to raise, let's raise it at this time.
Yeah. Book me in a meeting.
That's how I live my life. Let's not go there, because I'm not meant to be analysing why I don't have friends. It's meant to be a guide to social work. I'm lucky to have friends. I'm lucky to have forgiving friends who tolerate
Indeed.
Me.
Indeed. Tolerant, resilient friends.
Yeah. You'd occasionally get the green file, Cara.
I think
I'd put the green file out for you.
I feel so, that makes me feel even worse for Louise. Poor Louise.
She got the green file now.
Obviously, you're relaxed now. You're chilled. You're not in that ASYE mindset. You're open. Yeah. You're ready. You're available.
I've matured. I am no longer the kind of, like, I've come full circle. I'm matured. I'm a social work dad. With
Indeed.
A dad board.
Indeed.
Right. Let's talk about this one then, because I've talked about a couple of my friends there, you know, a couple of my social work friends, and then my friend Jason, who was most definitely not a social worker. Do you notice a difference between your social work friends and what I can only describe? If you can think of a better word, give me one, Cara. But can you tell me the difference between your social work friends and your normal friends?
You know what? I knew you were going to say the word normal, because that's all I could think.
I searched for different
words. Social work friends and then normal people.
I was going to use the word civilians. I was going to use the word normies. I was just going to use the word citizens. But I've gone for normal. Tell me the difference between your social work friends and your normal friends. Is there a difference?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. I think with your social work friends, your connections are much deeper, probably because of all that sort of like hardship that you've kind of experienced, and just the conversations that you're just generally having are of a much more intense, deep way. It's not that sort of shallow chit chat when you first meet someone. It's kind of you're going in full wham bam.
Yeah.
Here's kind of the groggy details of everything. And I think therefore, like, your relationships are more open and honest, and also you can talk shop, which I know anyone else will find boring, but being able to talk to someone about your day or what's happened or kind of any updates, and not seeing like that sense of fear and shock and revulsion on their face and sort of sinking away. Really ruining the mood of a party because you know, sometimes the conversations that we have just aren't always light and party ready, are they, really? So I think that's kind of the real difference. I think the counteract of that is that sometimes you end up with all the deep stuff and none of the shallow, fun, frivolous stuff with your social work friends. And I think
very good point.
Sometimes you kind of, I don't know, you don't even get to talk about them as people in such a obvious way and get to know them. So you might have been social work friends with them for a year, and then you're like, oh, you've got a husband and three kids. I didn't know.
Yeah, you hear about everybody else's family but theirs.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you can miss those opportunities. And I think sometimes that's when those friendships last or they don't, because that's when they're kind of built on kind of dodgy foundations, really. But I think, like, my social work friends are those ones that sort of deep chat that they're open to, that people are able to kind of make that much deeper connection with each other.
Yeah, I still remember to this day my first night out with a group of female social workers. Obviously, being a man in social work, I'm relatively rare. I'm a rare and special thing. Definitely very rare and special with my file system. Now, I remember my first night out. I'd been a social worker maybe 5-6 months by that point. First Christmas night out with a load of female social workers who were, you know, 10, 15, 20 years older than me. Wow. I was like, it was like the hangover. The best way I can describe it was like the hangover. I was like, wow, I am not in Kansas anymore. What a rip-roaring time I had. Definitely can't talk about that on the podcast, lest we get complaints, mainly from the social workers who I'd be snitching on. But I was like, yeah, what an absolutely wild time I had. And it was strange, really, because I've done lots of jobs before. I was a social worker. I've been a builder. I've been a coal merchant. I've been a chicken factory worker. I've managed nightclubs, I've managed hotels, I've managed bars. I've done lots of varied things before I became a social worker, a youth worker, careers advisor, and lots of different things. And in all of those jobs, we didn't go out and talk about work. Mm. In social work, more or less exclusively on every single night out that I've ever been out on every social event that I've ever had with social workers, I would say 75% of the time has been talking about work. Mm. But it's been talking about work in a very, very different way. I mean, look, the jobs I've had before social work were like interesting, but they weren't like social work jobs are like really interesting. You're really already dealing with the cutting edge of society, the things you're seeing and what you're experiencing is really, really tough stuff. And I think to have that ability to debrief and to look at dark humor and make light of, you know, the tragedy that you face without mocking our clients, never mock the clients, never make light of their situations, but make light of, I can't believe we've done that. I think that that camaraderie with friends and the ability to let off that steam in an informal area does wonders for your mental health and well-being. You need that release. And I think potentially that's something that we've lost with lockdown and home working. Do we still find that ability to get the release that we once did when we were all together in the office? Is it as easy to make friends over the past 4 years as it was pre-pandemic?
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. And in the office that I used to work in, one of my first social work job, it was right next to a load of pubs in Pompey. And going out after work on a Friday afternoon was kind of the routine of the team. And I've had many a good night out and bonded with people. And like you say, that I think there is that release of like, okay, we're done. Able to kind of process some of the stuff that you've kind of experienced. And yeah, like you say, it's kind of find the joy in what you're doing and find the reason again, I think, sometimes when you feel overwhelmed. I moved into the shady world of management about 4 years ago, just as lockdown hit. So I do feel there's something different in terms of when you become a manager in a team, that you lose some of that camaraderie because of the relationships. And so it's trickier for me to kind of identify, because I wouldn't say that I'm as friendly friends as I was when I was kind of counterparts with people, just because, you know, inappropriate. But I do think there is something about people not being in the place together, not being able to have that Friday afternoon. You know, and it doesn't always have to include alcohol. I mean, I know that's one of the deadly crutches of social work, but just being, you know, we used to go for a team breakfast and make use of the free-for-all of coffee.
Yeah.
It's just those sorts of connections, that laugh, that fun, that, yeah, potentially I think has been lost because people just aren't as regularly in the same place at the same time.
How did you find that crossover into management in terms of friends? I mean, I've only been a manager for around 6 months. I kind of did it as a favor to my good friend who was a service manager at the time, and we literally lost the manager. We needed the position filled, and I was asked if I wanted to do it. And it was not like stepped up, really, would be the best way to describe it. And I was good at it, but it wasn't really for me. I felt like I was having to play manager rather than be manager. And I treat people in my team with the same friendly nature that I would have treated people if I was on their level. And that was easy for me, but I found it was awkward for them. And I only realized the inappropriate name. I wasn't doing anything inappropriate. Let's get this clear again. You know, let's get this very, very clear here. I wasn't doing anything inappropriate, but I found that it was inappropriate for them because obviously, you know, I was the one that was, you know, doing their supervision, doing their performance management, having to, you know, crack the whip when it was needed. And I noticed that what I was doing and still trying to be everyone's friend wasn't appropriate by their reaction. I think this can be the downfall in social work at times when you move into management, because you're not really given management training. You know, we've talked about this in the podcast before in terms of it's a very, very strange situation where a lot of excellent social workers don't make good managers, and equally people who maybe found difficulty in social work practices, certain aspects of frontline practice, can be excellent managers. You know, we don't get training either way. I found that leap very, very difficult, and I probably would have always found it difficult because such is my nature to want to try and make people laugh and want to entertain people. That's kind of my innate being. How did you find that switch over where you could no longer be people's friends and you had to be their manager instead?
Yeah, I think I was lucky because I moved into a new team. I think it's always harder if you're within. And I was really lucky because my friend Carly was one of the other managers, and we were friends before, but becoming managers together, just the two of us, we became really solid friends. So I felt like I had that connection with someone like really solidly at that time, that I didn't really miss the feeling of having that kind of wider team. But it is really hard. I think, you know, you can't be friends in the same way, because like you say, there's that power dynamic, and
yes,
it is uncomfortable, and there is that time that you might have to, you know, call someone out and challenge something.
Yeah.
And to be friends in that same nature, I would definitely say, unfortunately, along the way at times I have lost friends when that connection hasn't quite sat right, whether that's old friends that then have been in teams or come into teams, and I wouldn't actively choose now to work in a team as a manager if I had friends within it, because I just think it, no matter how hard you try, that power dynamic does make a difference.
I managed two of my friends. One friendship it made better, the other friendship I lost entirely.
Yeah, and I've had that. I have lost friends because of that. Mm-hmm. And also there's information that you hold in that management role that may not always be open and available to everyone else.
Yes.
Especially if it's in relation to personal issues.
So you can't,
you know, go out on a Friday night and be like, meh, 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 you know, because potentially you might lose your job.
Yes.
You know, it's completely unprofessional. So, it's really tricky, but I think I was really lucky when I moved into management, because I'd worked in social work for a long time. I had really established friendships who had also moved into different areas. And then, yeah, for sure, the biggest factor for when I moved into my management was having a friend there alongside me. And she absolutely made that time and that transition so much easier. And I don't think I could have done it in the same way without her. I'm currently trying to convince her to do a high rocks competition, like a CrossFit competition, which she's
Hold the line.
I know.
My best friend who I was talking about, he's a high rocks man. He competes nationally in the high rocks competition. I was going to go up with him and go to the glad and realize you did high rocks.
No,
wow.
I don't yet, but I really want to. And
I shall put you in touch with my non-social work friend, and he can teach you all about high rocks.
Yeah, but that's the sort of friendship that we had, and I think and still have, and I think that's what kept me through that. But I can imagine definitely if you're promoted within, then that's really difficult. And also, if you want people to like you, don't get into management.
And that is my problem entirely. I want people to like me, which is kind of ironic given my old file system.
Indeed.
We had better offer people some advice to make friends, given our title of this podcast is A Social Worker's Guide to Making Friends. And we've talked about that we've got them. God knows how I have, but I still have. We've talked about how we've managed to maintain those friendships. Let's talk a little bit how to get those. But before I do this, Cara, I'm going to ask you honestly, do you struggle to make new friends now you're in your 30s?
Yeah, I think it's harder because you're more self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whenever I watch programs where it's like, or watch kids, you know, in terms of their interactions, and it's like, oh, I don't care, like, just go up to anyone. Do you want to play? Yeah, great. Mm-hmm. But you become more self-aware for sure as an adult. It becomes more awkward, doesn't it?
Yes, because if I think about my best friends, my two best friends, Jason and Dan, one is my best friend because him and my dad were very good friends, and by the happenstance of birth, we happened to live in the same town, and his sister went out with one of my best friends at the time, and that's how we hooked up, we got together and began our 25-year bromance, still going strong. And I think of my other friend, best friend, Captain Dan, we were in the same halls together at uni. We started uni 21 years ago. We were in the same halls there. Just blind luck, both of those. I think of my social work friends, just blind luck as well. That's chance. But making new friends, you know, if you meet someone, the older you get, the harder that can be, I find, because there's like an element of shame, there's an element of awkwardness. Like, how do you do this? How do you advance this? And I was reading something the other day, which is quite sad, actually, which was, obviously, you've got three different ways of doing averages, haven't you? Mode, median, and mean. So the median number in that is like the most common number. So, you know, so the most common number of friends that people give, not the average, but when you think, I'm going to ask you this question, Cara. This survey was done about how many close friends people said they had. What do you think the most common answer was as a number? Not the average, because some people had lots, some people had few, so that averaged out in the middle. What do you think the most common answer was when people were asked, how many close friends have you got?
Like two or three? Zero.
Yeah, the median answer to this was the most common answer given was that people had zero close friends. And, you know, we are seeing massive, massive issues with loneliness in society. And I think you maybe, you know, you have lots of connections online, but as those connections move from in-person to online, now, look, I'm not saying you can't have very close friends online. There's certainly, I'm very, very grateful due to the platform that I've had through Social Work News and Social Work World that I've made many people. I've met many people in my life and I've made many friends online. Many of those I've never met in person. Obviously, I'm grateful to have met you in person, Cara, several times. But, you know, we used to talk before we'd even met. We were friends before we'd even met because we had that shared commonality. But yeah, it's quite tragic, really, when I read that and I thought, yeah, what a sign and what a damning sign of our kind of modern society where we're always online and we might have 1,000 or more connections on Instagram and social media platforms like other ones like Twitter, Facebook, so on. But most people would say they had zero close friends.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad. And I think there is an epidemic of loneliness and the impact that loneliness can have. And we keep ourselves busy, don't we, online? But actually, the reality of home, even if you have a partner and children, it's important to recognise like the benefit that friends bring to your life beyond that and making time for it.
And I think there's great value in that. There's great value in having friends with people who just like you for who you are, not because of the role you've got, but just like you for the person that you are. So we had a question came in a few weeks back. You know, every Friday I write a column for Social Work News called Social Work Supervision. We're very grateful, our listeners and readers and lots of people send messages in. And sometimes I take those messages from our group, Social Work World group. We've got about 60,000 or so social workers in there. And sometimes people will post things and I'll say, right, I'm going to use this for a question. But this one came in a few weeks back, but I only wrote about it last week because I knew we were going to be doing this podcast. And it was from a reader who only wanted to be gone by the name of S. And she said, hi, I'd like it if you could keep this anonymous because it's not something I feel comfortable talking about openly. I found it really hard to make friends in my job. I feel I try my best to be nice to colleagues, but everyone else in the team seems to have a connection I don't. Even when I get invited on nights out, it feels like it's only being done out of kindness and not to exclude me. If this doesn't sound too weird, can you give me some tips on how to make friends as an adult? And I read that and I thought, I don't think that's weird at all. I think a lot of people may be in that position. And I know that I've kind of been in that position at times myself, Cara. I think, well, I'd like to get this to know this person better, but I just can't. Again, the file system probably wasn't helping in that one. But could you see, you know, because I found some, you know, kinship and understanding in what our reader had said there. Is that something you could understand too?
Yeah, totally. I often feel in kind of social gatherings, always feel like I'm in my head. I feel really not a part of that. And so I can really relate to kind of, especially if you go into an established team that maybe people already have those friendships, that sort of routine of going out, doing those things, that you feel a bit of a spare part and you worry about, you know, do you fit in? You know, do they like you? Are you going to be accepted into the clan of that team and those sets of colleagues? So I think it's completely relatable and something that probably a lot of people can kind of empathize with.
I think it'd be hard as well if that team has a culture of activities that perhaps don't fit with your own choices yourself. Say, for example, if a lot of that team's socializing involves nights out and drinking alcohol, you know, I'm teetotal, I don't drink at all, but that's a personal choice. I find that difficult. You know, I just do that for health reasons. But if you do that for cultural reasons, or perhaps because you've had a problem with alcoholism in the past, or religious reasons, it can be difficult. But I did my best to give some answers. You know, I always try and give some honest answers and try my best to respond to our readers. And I gave 10 reasons that I, and we better get to this point because again, it is that we'll lose friends, we'll lose listeners if I don't actually cover this. So I'm going to end the show by just going through these one by one, Karen, just to see what you think. So the first thing I said to our reader S was that I think one good way of making friends is to show genuine interest in other people, because I've generally found that if you show a keen interest in other people, people will eventually show that interest in you. And if you want to make friends, you have to genuinely be interested in them. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, totally. We need to stop being too cool for school. I think there's a real
real
movement of being like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to be aloof. Actually, like, people care about each other and want to care about each other. And if you are interested in someone, just say that's, you know, an interesting thing about you, or that, you know, even if it's just a compliment, anything that kind of engages someone, and don't worry about how that comes across. Just go for it and engage with that person.
Very well said, my friend. The second point I said was that I think you should share things about yourself as well. A good way of doing this is, I mean, how many times are you in the workplace and someone says, how's your weekend or how are you doing? We'll usually we'll just say it was good. I'm doing fine. I'm all right. How are you? A little trick in those situations to build more meaningful connections with people is to say, just offer up a little bit. Don't get too intense, but offer up a little bit of what you did on the weekend. So like we started the podcast, you know, Vince, how are you? And I'd say, oh yeah, great. This weekend, I took my girlfriend to York. We did this. What did you get up to? By venturing to offer a little bit about yourself first, the other person will usually offer something back. And those shared connections are how you make friends. Would you agree with that? Is that another tip that you could offer a commendation to? Would you recommend my tip giving skills on that one as well, Cara?
Yeah, surprisingly, it's a very good tip.
Thank you very much.
I agree.
The next one kind of leads on from that, which is to find common ground. So look for shared interests with people. Now, obviously, in social work, we've got an obvious one, which is we're social workers. But it could be things like books, hobbies, television shows. You could go up to a colleague and say, hey, have you ever heard of Harry Potter?
Isn't that niche reference. I'm so cool and no one else will know that.
Do you like TV too?
I like TV. Do you like TV?
Nice.
I read. I also eat. Do you eat?
Nice. Have you ever heard of that thing called water? Tasty. Do you like a bath? That would be, imagine that. Imagine that. Imagine if a man my age, 40-year-old, went up to a student social worker and said, hey, do you like the bath? Like, imagine.
That's not going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, it's going one way. It's a one-way trip to HR. When you find common ground, listeners, try and make it seem a bit normal. Next point, I think this is a good one, is initiate plans yourself. Now, a lot of the time when we're trying to establish friendships with people, what we do is we wait for the other person to offer the olive branch. But what I found is really, really good is to make like friendship dates. Just say, hey, I've got these tickets to a show this week. You know, would you fancy coming with me? And if someone says no, that's fair enough. Just take it. But if you make that initiative and say, hey, you know, there's a new bar opened up. There's a new theater performance coming to town. There's a new place opening. You know, there's a new exhibition at the local museum. I think things like that can be really good, that if you don't wait for other people to initiate plans, but you do those off your own back, I think that can be a good way of making friends too.
Yeah, totally. I do this all the time because I am single and I don't have children. So if I don't reach out to my normal friends, let alone my social work friends, people are just busy being busy.
Yes.
And so, you know, you have to kind of reach out to people and say, actually, let's plan something, let's do something. And and I think even in initial friendships, like I said before, people are busy doing nothing, being online, you know, oh, what are you doing tonight? I'm just going home. But actually, you've kind of created a busyness around that, where even if it's just going for a coffee or trying a new cafe for breakfast or whatever like that, I think it's really important to, you can't sit back and say, well, no one's asking me to go out and do anything, and not be the person that also is trying.
Exactly that. That's a very good point. You know, so sometimes in friendship groups, it can feel like you're always the one that's making the effort. But a lot of the times, because other people just feel a bit awkward and a bit difficult doing that themselves. And I think that, you know, the next point I was going to make is being consistent in making those efforts. And I think that kind of comes hand in hand with that one. Be consistent. Understand that friendships take time and consistency. You know, engage with your colleagues, show kindness, be reliable, be patient. You know, let those connections evolve naturally, really, like you've said there. And the next point I've said to our reader, and I think I'll share this with you guys as our listeners, is to maybe think about joining groups, creating groups. You know, a lot of friendships are formed through those mutual interests. So if you're in the workplace, think of, you know, any activities that are part of a group outside of the workplace. Is there a local yoga class? Is there a painting class? Is there things that you can do that you can find connections? And look, I just spoke a few minutes ago, Cara, there about the internet potentially pushing people closer apart from in-person connections. But on the flip side, Facebook makes it a darn sight easier to find what's going on in your local area. So if you can get over that initial awkwardness of walking in a room where you don't know anyone, you can make a lot of good friends through local activities, and you can find niche friends who like the same things you do.
And there's so many groups now for people trying to connect. Yes. I see more time. Obviously, I'm near the sea. I see so many new swimming groups popping up, walking groups. Like, there are so many people that are using the internet to connect and to establish those real life friendships that just feel great. And so you're not alone. There are, like you said, lots of people that feel like they don't have a solid friendship group. So put yourself out there, you will find connections, and being able to talk to someone a little bit online can really help then having that commonality by the time you actually meet face to face.
That's a really good point, because you can say, hey, it's Vince from Facebook. How you doing? You can do that. Attend social functions. We've kind of covered that one when we spoke about nights out. I think another important thing is to be yourself. You know, it's such a twee saying, but it's so true. These sayings are twee and they're overused because they're true. It is far better to be loved for who you are by a handful of people than liked by everyone for who you are not. Because authenticity attracts people. If you can be true to yourself and your values, it not only makes you feel better, but it also draws people to you who like you for who you are. Real friends are made through genuine connections, and those real friends will appreciate you for who you are. And it can be difficult and it can be very hard, because by being yourself, you might lose friends, and some people may find you intolerable, but the friends that will like you will love you, and you'll make friends who are like you and who will love you at your worst, just as they love you at your best when you perform for people. So I think, you know, when you're trying to make friends, you've got to be yourself, because, you know, why pretend to be someone else? Hard to do, easy to say, but I think we've got to try to do that as well, have we not, more making connections with people.
Yeah, and I think especially in a social work environment, if we're all a bunch of social workers, if you're putting on a front, you know, people will feel that uneasiness in you. Just be yourself, and like you say, there's lots of people out there in the world, lots of people that want to make connections. You will find the right people for you.
And the last two things to do are practice self-compassion. You know, understand that, like we were talking about earlier, you know, understand that most people will say that they've got zero close friends. So appreciate the friendships you've got. The quality of friendships is far more important than quantity. And I read something the other day, Cara, that said, as human beings, we only have capacity to manage 5 stable, strong, very loving friendships, very loving connections. In terms of, if we want to be able to invest the requisite time and attention and affection and care and love to friends and family members, we only have the time to maintain 5 adult connections outside of our, you know, children and parents and family members. These are kind of friendships of people that could, you know, your family there regardless. These are people who can sort of leave you if you want to. If you're in a relationship, your relationship takes up 2 of those slots. So if you're married or you're in a long-term relationship or you're in a stable, good relationship, maybe even short-term, but it might be good, might be very, very important to you. Most people only have the capacity to really have 3 very, very strong relationships, your kind of best friend relationships on top of that. So I think we can sometimes be tricked when we see how many hundreds or maybe thousands of connections we have online or other people have online. But in terms of those very real in-person relationships, I do believe that we should be easy. We should go easy on ourselves and stop beating ourselves up and accept that, you know, even if we've only got one best friend, we're very, very lucky to have that indeed.
Absolutely. Quality over quantity.
Quality over quantity. My ethos entirely. Well, Cara, we've come to the end of this, Cara. Is our friendship stronger or weaker for this hour-long exploration? What would you say? You've had the green file out for an hour. I hope you're grateful.
I mean, that did make me wonder for a little while, but, you know, after an hour of chit-chat with you, always stronger, Vince, always stronger.
I'm going to end while I'm ahead. We're going to stop there. Well, listeners, as always, thank you ever so much for tuning in. And listeners, you're welcome to our friendship club too. Do you like baths? Well, no, actually, I'm not going to that note. That's a strange thing to do, but I'm more the shower man myself, to be perfectly honest. Anyway, listeners, moving on from the bath versus shower debate, that's another show entirely. Thank you ever so much for tuning in. As always, it would mean the world to us if you could head over to iTunes or Spotify, anywhere that you get the podcast from. I'll leave a review for this. If you do leave that review, we will read it out on next week's show. Do head over to the website, mysocialworknews.com, to read the articles we've been discussing today and many more. Cara writes a column every Friday. I write a column every Thursday, so you can see those over at mysocialworknews.com. We'll catch up with you next week. Until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.